Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Cecilia Cutcher, and I'm with Petrician and Food Healer, and I'm really excited about the interview today. We are going to be talking with Julia Szabo, and Julia Szabo is a nationally recognized pet reporter and animal health advocate who produced the popular Pets column in the New York Post for 11 years. She's the author of 7 books, including Medicine Dog, which is a mashup of dog memoir and medical memoir, coming in March 2014 from Lions Press. Julia is also the health editor of the online community Dogster.com and a frequent contributor to PJMmedia.com and pens the blog Dog is My Doctor. I've known Julia for a while. She's got tons of great information. I'm really excited to have her here. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you, Celia. Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled. I'm really, really excited about this. And so today we're going to be talking about all kinds of stuff. Julia specializes in dogs, so cat people, I'm really sorry to tell you this, but you'll always get some good information because most of the stuff that's good for dogs is pretty good for cats too, and always good to listen anyway. So Julia's been the pet reporter for 11 years. How did you get into dogs?
Well, before I was the pet reporter, I was the fashion critic at the New York Post, and I had emergency surgery in 1999, and it was right before Fashion Week. So I was flat on my back on morphine in a hospital. And that's a good excuse for not showing up to work. And so thereafter, I was redirected as the pets columnist, and we started a pets column in 99. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me and my career and my life. And so that's how that happened. And
So were you a big dog person before you got the column?
Yes, I was. I was. And I had adopted my very first pit bull in 1994. Mm-hmm. So by now, I was up to like 3 or 4 at that point.
Wow.
Only. we like to, go slow. At any rate, that really was like the most meaningful thing that ever happened to me was that accident.
It's amazing what dogs can do. When someone comes into your life, I had a Jack Russell that I got when I was 18, and he was known as Turbo, and Turbo was crazy. But Turbo was really, really amazing because when I was going through some really tough times, he was, besides the only one that would stick around and help me out, he also was able at one point to look at me and be like, you're kind of a mess. And he was the only one that had the guts to do it. All my friends and everyone was just like, she'll figure it out. And I remember thinking to myself that my dog doesn't even want to hang out with me. And I need to get my act together, So I really attribute Turbo for really having the guts to come forward and say something that nobody else wanted to.
Yep.
And the power of a dog is just something that's unbelievable,
Yeah, they pull no punches.
They really don't. And they tell you the truth. There's no lying in
dog
land.
And they vote with their feet.
Totally. So then I know that a lot of pet reporting is doing things like fashion shows for dogs or new collars. And so did you like those columns? Or?
No. I had to be, forced to do those because they were so not serious. At that time, people were still looking at me and saying, you rescue pit bulls? Shouldn't you be rescuing people from pit bulls?
Right.
And it was like, oh, man. So, I really wanted to always do the hard-hitting things, mm-hmm. the things about BSL, breed-specific legislation. And of course, nutrition and health, because mm-hmm. My animals had already started having health issues, which, at the time, the economy was a lot healthier than it is now. So, there was no problem with, just going to the animal medical center and spending thousands of dollars, Mm-hmm. I mean, not that it was ideal to do, but it wasn't like it was either that or eating for the next 2 months.
Yeah,
so now, of course, it's really about, like saving the money, saving the heartache and the money of emergency or just any other kind of chronic condition, any other vet, you know, that would necessitate a vet visit.
So when you would take a sick dog or your pet, for example, to the vet, would you tell them that you were experimenting with herbs and foods and stuff, or?
Well, you see, this sort of came a little bit later. This the real sort of the kind of crisis point for that came in 2002 and 2003.
Okay,
because one of my dogs had tetanus. You know, and this is incredibly rare for a dog to have tetanus, as you know. And so it was starting to be like, oh, well, maybe all of this is happening to me so I can get really good material for this column. But this was really hard. This was my, I mean, look, we all have a favorite dog, I'm sorry to admit. And this was my favorite dog. She was a little petite little brindle pit bull named Britannia, or B for short. And I actually had to be, doing this sort of taping of a TV thing in my house. So, you know, there were, all the dogs were there, and Britannia had these cropped ears. I didn't crop them. I adopted her that way. And they were plastered flat on the top of her head, and she had this expression of, like, this grimace of, like, this. And so I didn't know what was going on, and then she couldn't swallow her food.
Oh, wow.
And then I made her scrambled eggs, and she couldn't even swallow that. So as soon as the camera people were out of there, and even they noticed, they were like, Miss, your dog looks sick, you know? And I was like, I'm sort of waiting for you guys to hurry up. And so by this point, she couldn't walk. And so my then husband had to carry her.
Wow.
And we ran her to the nearest hospital, which is about 6 blocks away. And the exam showed that it was tetanus. So then came the attempt to get the antitoxin. Anyway, it was a whole, like, drama. Yeah. And that'll be a whole chapter of the book that's coming in March. So I don't want to, like, bore you to death now. But to fast forward to that, the point of the food and petrician was that, you know, I looked at a can of food because she was entubed in her stomach, and that's how she was eating.
Wow.
And I looked at the can of, you know, brand shall not be named, prescription canned diet that I was supposed to pump into the stomach tube at home once I got her home, because she was in ICU. And a lot of people said, you know, why don't you just put her down? And I said, why don't you just fill in the blank with something I can't say on the radio? And so I was like, you know, so I'm here, I am pumping this in, and I'm reading the ingredients, and I'm like, oh my God, it was like putting Raid into her stomach. And I knew that it wasn't going to, you know, be filtered through the, you know, the normal channels, the saliva, the tongue. It was going straight in there. And so I took that up with the veterinarian at the time, and she was like, preservatives are good for dogs.
Oh, God. Like,
and, you know, to her credit, she's now like a super holistic, like, mama.
Good.
But at the time, she was talking to me like I was an idiot.
Yeah.
And I didn't even want to get into that. So I went to the store and I bought whatever nicer, you know, less toxic brand there was. And I put water in it, and I put it in the blender, and I tried to make it liquefied, and I pushed that through the... Anyway, so that began the whole thing of detoxifying the dog.
Wow.
So, I did everything from the, you know, better foods and also, you know, milk thistle for her liver, because she had just been through so much. She was on so many medications, anticonvulsants, antibiotics, anti-everything, that she started seizuring in the hospital. And then there was concern that she would seizure at home. So I was sent home with Valium that I was supposed to, inject in her butt if she woke me up at night. No, it was a real thing. And I had to keep the place quiet, you know, and I didn't want her to smell food that I was eating. So I would run out to the hallway or eat in the street, and, you know, it was things like that. So anyway, so thank God we brought her back from the brink. But that was the thing that really just changed my life. And also for myself, I became very vigilant about ingredients and everything, and giving them nice things. And also seeing with my own eyes the dramatic change.
Yeah.
Of a well-fed dog, you know, from a poorly fed dog to a well-fed dog.
Totally. It's like the junk food diets. You know, you see these animals, and some of them do okay on them, but it's like when you actually see an animal that's on whole food and they thrive, you're just like, oh, my God, this is a dog.
Yeah, you know? It's incredible.
And there's so many cases of people that have had a pet that has gotten ill that has led them on a path of nutrition and taking better care of themselves. You know, it's really, it's pretty fascinating how that works, and I love it. How did you learn about like what would work and what didn't when you first started doing all this stuff?
Well, that I owe to the pet reporting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I would get a scoop, as it were, on all sorts of things. There was a botanical chemo that I was given the scoop on, made by a company in Montana called Buck Mountain Botanicals.
Cool.
And then they also have all these organic, beautiful supplements for dogs, which I was taking myself. So again, the milk thistle in capsules, the hawthorn for the heart, you know, and I sort of became a bit of a renegade because I, you know, like subsequently when I was treating dogs or caring for and fostering dogs who had heartworm disease, I would go ahead and slip them hawthorn too. And people would say, oh no, even the person who sold the hawthorn was like, I wouldn't do that. But I felt it was important to strengthen the heart so that it could do this. Anyhow, so I really sort of, you know, in a way treated them like guinea pigs and experimented on them. But, you know, the end result was that most of them lived to 16 and 17.
That's fantastic.
I know. So, I mean, I was, you know, and every time when it came to the end, vets would say, wow, well, whatever you were doing, you were doing
right. Keep doing it. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I love that. It's like, what are you doing? You're going to kill your dog. Oh, my God, your dog looks great. Keep doing it. It's like, okay, thanks. Yeah.
And at the same time, I was in a very toxic relationship myself. My marriage was a disaster area. And so I sort of realized that if I started to take these supplements, I could, you know, help myself too. That it was all just like about combating toxicity.
It's really, really cool. And it's amazing too, just even in terms of toxicity, like everyone talks food, 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 but you know, there's environment, there's pollutants, there's, you know, stuff in our water, there's stuff everywhere. And so the immune system strengthening is really important because even if you eat a great diet and you're, you know, live somewhere like Beijing where it's, you know, the smog is so bad you can't breathe, you're still going to get sick. So you've got to really help your body functions. And animals get sick so much more quickly than we do.
And not only that, you're walking the dog at the exact snout level of the exhaust of the car.
It's a great point.
And when that dawned on me one day, I was like, wow, that's amazing. And it's actually, especially the taller dogs.
Mm-hmm.
So I became much more mindful of that and also shampoos. I know that's not our topic, but, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, totally.
And just evicting chemicals and having a kind of sanitary, you know, belt around everyone.
And I think that's a really good point too, because there's a lot of arguments regarding if you put something on your skin, if it's going to penetrate into your body and all this stuff. They've proven it does. And so shampoos with heavy scents, I mean, that always kills me. It's like you pick these things up and it's like, you know, mountain breeze, and it's like dogs smell or sense of smell so much stronger than ours. And I mean, they, you know, to quote my mother, they smell like a French whore. So this poor dog is probably like, you know, I stink.
Exactly. And also the flea and tick medication.
Yeah.
I ceased. I stopped all heartworm, all flea and tick.
Wow.
And that's when I learned about neem oil
so
and diatomaceous earth. So it's like, you know, that's what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then I used the neem stuff for myself and even neem supplements for myself and all that stuff. So
it's good stuff. Yeah. It really, really is. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's see. What would be your one tip for the typical dog owner?
Like, oh, if it had to be one thing like in the pantry.
One thing. Like, what's your favorite supplement? Or what's your favorite additional?
Oh, it's a hard one.
I know. This one's tough.
Because, yeah, of course, we didn't even get into spices. And okay. Oh, all right. It'd have to be coconut oil then.
Okay.
Because coconut oil has so many amazing applications.
Mm-hmm.
And first of all, dogs love it.
Yeah.
People love it.
Yeah.
I mean, some people don't. But those people are very difficult. And, you know, why bother talking to them? Those are probably also the people that don't like dogs. But it, you know, it's wonderful to cook with. You can cook, as you know, at high heat. But the great thing for dogs is you can clean their teeth with it, and they won't protest. If you have a dog that you rescued who smells and you don't have a hand shower attachment, this actually happened to me recently, and you start feeding coconut oil, you notice within a few days the odor of the dog changes and just neutralizes.
So cool.
And the coat and skin become conditioned. And it's antiviral, antifungal. Yep. I mean, what doesn't it do?
So it's the best.
I mean, I love it. And also coconut butter, that, you know, the coconut manna.
That stuff is so good.
I know, it's insane.
I know. Yeah, I can't keep it in the
house.
You
can put medication right in there. It's like, oh,
brilliant.
Give me some more. Uh-huh. Yep.
Brilliant.
And the toothbrushing thing is really like, everybody's like, oh, really? And their breath smells lovely. Even if you don't wipe their teeth, mm-hmm. you know.
That's huge. I mean, that alone.
And that's the gateway to health is the teeth.
Yep.
So, if you were on a desert island, just make it one with coconut trees.
Awesome. Okay, well, we're going to take a little break. I'm here. I'm Celia Kutcher, the patrician, and with the Food Healer, and we will be back shortly.
You are listening to Lung by Izzy Dean on the HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Stay tuned for more from Celia Kutcher and Petrician.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
We're back. This is Celia Kutcher. I'm the Food Healer, and we're talking Petrician with Julia Szabo. Earlier we were talking about dogs, and now we're going to switch it up a little bit. First question I'm going to ask you, actually, is what do you think about the study that came out recently that states pet owners are healthier than non-pet owners?
Well, I'm not surprised to start with, mm-hmm. because not only are we safer against, intruders in our apartments in New York, but we are forced to get up and move our bottoms every day, at the minimum twice a day, but hopefully more than that, so three times, four times a day. Mm-hmm. And again, it's about just being aware of what goes in.
Yep. It
determines how you look and what comes out and how you and your outcome, mm-hmm. and how you end up. So, the thing is that dogs, as we know, have a very foreshortened lifespan. They never live as long as we want them to, even if it's up to 17 years or more. And it's just a very dramatic example for those of us who have dogs of how, if you take care of yourself, you really will have a better, longer life.
Yep, absolutely. And talking about that, we're going to talk about some stuff that happened to Julia. Her love of health and dogs led her to take better care of herself. But she's got a very interesting story about a gastrointestinal health crisis she went through recently, where some of the best advice for herself was given actually by her dog's vet. So can you tell us about that?
Yes, absolutely. Well, that thing that, that reason I was in the hospital in 1999, and I was septic, I actually had sepsis, was because of a perirectal fistula. Mm-hmm. And it basically leaked stuff that was not supposed to be in my bloodstream into my bloodstream, poisoned me.
Whoa.
And it was very similar to what happened to the dog who had tetanus a few years later. So your whole system is hijacked by this infection. So, I had to figure out how to hold myself in one piece. And then later, again, the pet reporting led me to help one of my dogs who had arthritis. Mm-hmm. And I learned about stem cell regeneration therapy with a company in San Diego called VetStem, VET-STEM. And what they do is they do a liposuction on the dog, like a tummy tuck. They take fat out, and then they process the fat for the dog's own stem cells. It has nothing to do with embryos.
Awesome.
It's complete adult stem cells from body fat or adipose tissue. Then that is FedExed back from San Diego to wherever you are. Mm-hmm. I was in New York. And so injected into the joint and intravenously. Hmm. And once it's injected intravenously, it travels all over the body looking for other areas of inflammation and things that it can regenerate. These cells are the body's like sort of microscopic mechanics. They do search and repair.
And like how often did you have to do this to your dogs?
Well, we did it the one time in 2008, and then we got so many
vials of viable cells that we were able to do a couple of booster injections, which was amazing. So he, this started when he was 14. He was a big pit bull, 75 years old. Pounds, rather. 70, see, wishful thinking.
Well,
75 pounds. Right. And then he lived to 17. So
it's amazing.
It was incredible. And he had a very good quality of life. He started reversing the clock. And sometime around 2009, one of the vets who worked on his case in San Diego was coming through New York, and she and I had lunch, and she said, "Why don't you look into stem cells for your condition?" And I was like, because I thought it was just for arthritis.
Yeah.
And so she gave me some pointers on how to find clinical trials and stuff. And that set me on this path to get stem cell therapy for myself. And it took several years because I had to find the doctor, the creative doctors in America who had the boldness and the vision to do this. And I finally did in January.
I'm assuming there aren't many.
Well, exactly, and that's because, you know, there are so many restrictions on this, and there's so much confusion, thanks to the media.
Yeah.
You know, everybody automatically blames Mr. Bush, but it's not his fault. Really, it's the it's the media obfuscated the issue by promoting only embryonic cells, and in reality, embryonic cells don't work well with adult tissue because they want to grow into embryos.
Makes sense.
So it's really our own stuff from our own fat and bone marrow and umbilical cord blood, which is it's an adult cell. It's not an embryonic cell. These are the things that work, and we know they work. And other places in the world, you know, use them.
Yeah.
So how did we get stuck on this embryonic debate? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it really slowed a lot of things down. And to this day, everybody's like, oh, stem cells. You know, either they get all weirded out that you're talking about abortion.
Yeah.
Or they automatically say, oh, yeah, isn't it too bad that whatever. You know, they just so I'm hoping that my book will clarify a few things through the dogs, like using dogs and nutrition, too, to make people aware of, again, it's like you got to take care of your cells because that's yourself, you know.
And so how many series have you been through so far? Have you done one?
Well, for humans, it's illegal to culture the cells. You can only use the cells you get that day.
Oh, wow.
But for dogs and horses,
okay,
it's permissible to culture the cells and get many millions and store them on ice for those booster shots. But yeah, for people, we can't do that yet. That's that is still FDA not approved.
Okay.
Or not FDA approved. Speak English, Julia. So it's an example of veterinary medicine being ahead of human medicine.
Yeah.
And it's astounding.
And it's funny too, and I think, you know, the reason for that is because a lot of, you know, science is like, well, it's only a dog or it's only a cat, you know, and they don't get that, but then at least they're willing to use them because they're pretty similar. I mean, we're mammals, you know what I mean? So we're similar enough.
We're all creatures.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's just really amazing that there are people with the foresight to, when this happens, to actually go, wow, we can actually do this on people.
Yeah.
And I think that's fantastic. And I think it's also really, really important.
Yeah.
Let me think, what else do I want to ask you? Oh, I know you're a big fan of food combining, and I know a lot of people don't know what that means, so would you be willing to describe that?
Yes, that's yet another regimen that I picked up from my dogs, because when it dawned on me after years that certain of my dogs were experiencing very bad food allergies, and then the solution was always put them on a grain-free diet, or a limited ingredient diet anyway, then I myself realized that rice was sort of, I loved it, but it was really, it was just sitting like a rock in my gut and expanding. And so I figured out that I can't do rice and protein together. And then I really became very hardcore. My ex-husband called me doctrinaire, but okay, keep it. And so I realized that, you know, you only have fruit first, like in the morning. You never have it for dessert. And, you know, like Thanksgiving used to be a disaster for me because I used to drink apple cider and have the stuffing and the potatoes and the rice and the meat and the, you know, oh my God. And it went on like that. And I didn't know why I was like exploding with, you know, gastric distress. And, you know, I basically had to stand outside. So, or alienate everybody in the house. So, it, you know, and then when I figured out the food combining, people look at you like you have three heads, mm-hmm. but, you know, it really works, and it kept me together until I could have this procedure. And again, it's something I picked up from the dogs.
So, for example, just for any listeners that might not know at all what this means, like, how do you...
Okay.
How do you eat
yeah.
your day?
All right. So I decide at each meal, am I going to have the protein meal mm-hmm. or the starch meal?
Okay.
And the two do not go together. That's the basic tenet. Mm-hmm. And so because the gut can only process one or the other. It can't mm-hmm. do both at the same time. So whichever one your tongue tastes first sends the message to your brain which digestive enzyme to go and dispatch okay. to help to process it. And if it was, let's say it's a hamburger,
right?
It's going to touch the bread first.
Yep.
So that meat is going to ferment and it's going to yeah. rot in your gut.
Ew.
How nice.
Ew.
And this is what causes, you know, the American diet is what causes so much bloating, overweight, yeah. every other problem. And so, you know, vegetables and salad go with everything.
Mm-hmm.
That's the wonderful thing about them. And they're so healthy and they promote digestion, especially the watery lettuce.
Yeah.
So, and also things like spinach, kale, that. So you have your greenery and you can throw a can of salmon on that with mm-hmm. some olive oil and apple cider vinegar, a little lime, whatever, mm-hmm. avocado, cucumber, and there is a beautiful salad. Do not have any kind of starch with it.
Mm-hmm.
Even a great starch, which my favorite is quinoa.
Mm-hmm.
Don't start mixing quinoa with the protein
yeah.
of the salmon because then you're shooting yourself in the foot the same way.
Yeah,
it's gluten-free, but it still needs, it's not going to process. So, or if you're going to have pasta, let's say, do not have meatballs. You know, just have
now that's
a vegetable
crazy
sauce.
Crazy talk.
Right.
Crazy
I
talk.
Know. That's sacrilege. Exactly. Exactly. Cloudy with a chance of no meatballs.
Yeah.
It's,
oh.
You know, and this is. And if you go out to eat, people, your companions
yeah.
and the wait staff are going to look at you like you have four heads.
Yeah.
Forget it. You
yeah.
know, especially at a Japanese restaurant, try asking for no rice. You know,
oh, forget it.
But, you know, I've done it and I've explained that I have an allergy. You know, mm-hmm. what do you have to say allergy
because yeah, exactly.
that's the big word that nobody wants somebody having. Having an yeah. anaphylactic shock right
yeah.
in the house. So, and then you get the hang of it. And then even if you go on a date, God forbid, when does that happen? You know, then your date will say, oh, actually, it's not as hard as I thought.
Because right.
then you order what you want and I order what I want, you know, whatever.
So how do you put the food combining in when you're feeding your dogs?
Okay, well, with them, you know, let's say I were to cook for them,
mm-hmm.
I would not mix chicken and rice. Now, that used to be the old
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, that's the standard
you know,
thing.
Yeah, like, oh, your dog's stomach is upset, make chicken and rice.
Totally.
It's like, no, that's not what you do. Actually, you do pumpkin, for
mm-hmm.
instance, or you do that wonderful coconut manna
yep.
butter that we talked about because that's very fibery.
Yep.
And it pulls everything together and they love it. So you also do you play with spices.
Mm-hmm.
You do cinnamon, turmeric, you know, these things tend to be very
yeah, turmeric's the best.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Yeah. And the dogs all love it.
Which blows my mind.
I know.
It's always like, you know, they know what they need, you know, but it's always like turmeric. I have a cat that goes nuts for turmeric. And if it falls out of the cabinet, it's like, I got to run for it. Or he steals it or breaks it. Or, oh my God, it's
the
crazy.
Same. And sardines.
Oh, forget it. I can't.
The cats
keep them in
love
the house.
Sardines.
Yeah.
So, you know, I give the dogs the juice and I give the actual fish to
mm-hmm.
the cats. And the cats love coconut manna. Forget it.
Yeah.
I'll just put a plate out and they'll kill each other for it.
Yep. I got one that's that way. I can't open up the coconut jar if he's in the kitchen because he likes just like.
He'll shred your legs.
Oh my God. Last time I did it, it was just a couple weeks ago. And, it, you know, it was molten because it's hot. And he knocked the whole thing over. And it was like, yeah, coconut
party.
On stone tile. I was like, oh, you know, there's still a nice big stain puddle in my kitchen.
Oh,
but it's,
man.
You know, at least he's going after that and isn't going after our food.
Exactly.
You know, so that works out pretty well. So let me see. What else can I ask you? What spices do you use?
Cinnamon, turmeric. I'm trying to think. What other spices do I... Well, yeah, see, with spices, I sort of learned the hard way that you have to be careful. Like, I read about parsley being
mm-hmm.
Anti-cancer, and so is celery.
Yeah.
And then I gave parsley to the dogs, and then yeah, I didn't realize it was a super diuretic, you know. And so
yeah.
that was like, okay, no, we're not going to do that again.
Yeah.
And I smelled the parsley in the pee-pee, so
mm-hmm.
I knew
wow.
it was that. Yeah, it was that pungent. So I was like, okay, so we stick with celery. And but, you know, so, yeah, you have to be sort of checking that always online or whatever, which things are toxic to dogs, because you can't really share everything. But, yeah, I would say cinnamon and turmeric are the big ones. And then the coconut oil, and then sometimes olive oil.
And what's the dosage on this stuff?
Well, you know, I'm like Rachel Ray. I guess I eyeball it. But, you know, there was a study, I believe, now I don't remember where it was. It might have been Copenhagen, but it had to do with arthritis. And it was a human study. Raw honey and cinnamon together. And I believe it's a teaspoon of cinnamon and a tablespoon of honey, but I don't quote me on that. But I think that's what it is. And again, dosage. I mean, honey and cinnamon, I don't think it's possible for the dog to keel over from too much of it.
Yeah.
So, you know, for the older dogs, I would add that in or put that into my own tea.
Cool.
You know?
Yeah.
And so those are things that definitely can be shared. Honey. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, honey. But some dogs don't love honey.
Yeah.
And some dogs will kill each other for it. So, you know, you got to just see it. Again, it's individual.
And I love that because, I mean, you know, that's the thing about blanket statements is that everybody's different. All dogs are different. All people are different. So to say, you know, this is the best thing ever. I mean, I kind of agree with you with the coconut oil because it does do so much. And it's, you know, if the animal likes it, I think it's absolutely worth it. And if you're going to buy coconut oil, spend the money and buy the cold pressed organic. Don't get the cheap stuff because it's garbage, really.
Yeah. And get it in a glass jar.
Yeah. Yeah, the plastic. You
that
don't
takes
want
longer to open while the cat is shredding your leg.
Exactly. Whatever you do, never put it in the refrigerator because you will never get it out of the jar. So that's one of my big lessons. Well, I've loved this. Thank you so much for coming, Julia. This was really fun. And I wanted to thank Heritage Radio Network for giving me the opportunity to talk pediatrician. I'm Celia Kutcher. I'm the food healer. And I hope you guys have a great night. And thanks for listening. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.